The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. This is Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. Did I miss anything last night? Should I know about anything? Anything?
I mean, yeah, there was a couple things.
Okay.
There were a couple things. A couple great baseball games.
Maybe you'll catch me up in a bit. On the show today, Will Hill will join us. All his bets across the sports betting landscape. Paul Sporer on baseball. Todd Wright will join us. Talk some fantasy.
Yeah.
Want to do a fantasy segment?
Todd Wright,
the greatest sports talk radio host there ever was. I will not be debated on this subject. Up all night with Todd Wright. It was actually all night with Todd Wright back in the day on ESPN Radio. We will talk fantasy with him. But we begin, by the way, you see everything else we're doing. Power rankings. My power rankings last week was for Kachta. Just got to tell you that, Kelly.
I think I kind of did the same thing this week, though, where yeah. I was like, I was sending in yours, and I'm like, wait, I think I'm missing a team on mine.
This is very, very odd power rankings week. We'll get into that. NFC South odds with the Bryce Young benching, and now Andy Dalton at the helm for the Panthers. About last night, great 80s film, by the way, with Demi Moore. About last night. Atlanta and Philly. Oh, my God. Or as I texted, oh, my God. What was that? Nick Sirianni, we're about to talk. Let's go back to the first half, though, first. Scoreless game. Philadelphia has a 4th-and-4 at the Atlanta 9. This is late first quarter, Kelly. And Nick Sirianni decides we're going to go for it because he's allergic to field goals. Hurts incomplete intended for Goddard. We remain scoreless. Let's go to the second half. By the way, I just want to point this out because we were pointing yesterday when I was talking about previewing this game. I was mentioning the ESPN stats and information piece about how Atlanta, first week of the season against Pittsburgh, when they were in shotgun, they passed 100% of the time. When they were in pistol, they ran over 90% of the time. You had to be more creative, Zach Robinson, and they were. Cousins was under center in the first half, 16 of 31 snaps. So they mixed it up at least. Halftime score, 7-6. The Eagles were up. By the way, we'll get to the Belichick Manning cast about that sequence at the end. But 7-6 was the score at the half. Philly was up 9-7 Atlanta now after they got a field goal. Then 10-9. Let's pick it up late third quarter. 10-9 Philadelphia. Atlanta 4th-and-4 at their own 47. They're down a point late in the third quarter. I couldn't believe they went for this. They did, and they converted Cousins to Ray-Ray McCloud for 11. I thought that was way too early in a one-point game to risk that. But they get the 11 yards to Ray-Ray. Next play, Cousins to Darnell Mooney for 42. Somersaults into the end zone. Touchdown. Atlanta up 15-10. The two-point try fails. 1:21 left third quarter. Philadelphia, 4th-and-inches at the Atlanta 46. Now in the fourth quarter, Tuchus push. Convert, Hurts for 3. Ultimately, it leads to a 17-play, 70-yard drive that took 9 minutes, 34 seconds off the clock. That is vintage Eagles. Hurts from 1 out, 16-15 Philly, and the 2-point try was good. 18-15 Eagles, 6:47 to go. Then Atlanta has a 4th-and-1 at their own 41. Remember, they're down 3 now with less than 6 minutes to play. Bijan just gets popped behind the line of scrimmage, fails. And the Eagles get the ball up 3, and they go into Eagle mode. And if you're a better in this game on the Falcons, you're only thinking to yourself, wow, is this going to be another push if you had the 6? Are we going to lose this? What's going on here? Philadelphia, 11 plays, 29 yards is what the drive ends up being. It ends up taking 3:59. Elliott ends up with a 28-yard field goal. Obviously, everybody knows to make it a 6-point game with 1:39. But let us break that down, y'all. They get it to 3rd-and-1 at the Atlanta 18, up 18-15, 2 minutes left in the game. They're up 3. Atlanta has all 3 timeouts left. Now, Atlanta correctly, Kelly, tries to jump off sides, which is the correct play at that point, to give Philly an automatic first down so that they could reset the downs, knowing that it was likely the Eagles would get a yard and they'd have to call their first timeout before the new set of downs. Sirianni then correctly, let me give him his flowers on this. Sirianni then correctly declines that, which is the proper play by him, countermeasure. Philly does get its yard. Atlanta uses their first timeout. So with 1:56 left, up 3, 1st-and-10 at the Atlanta 17, that's where we are with Atlanta having 2 timeouts left. It ends up 3rd-and-3 at the Atlanta 10, Philly still up 3, 1:46 left, Atlanta now out of timeouts. If Philly runs and they were gaining at a clip of 5.5 yards a carry, Jalen Hurts was gaining at a clip of 6.5 yards a carry, and you know about the Tuchus push. They invented it. They perfected it. They can still count on 2 yards on that, or at least positive yardage no matter what. If they do any of that, which has worked all night, you probably advance the ball a yard or two, maybe even get a first down. But more importantly, the clock goes down 40 seconds. And then if you're Philly, you get to make a fourth down decision. Maybe you Tuchus push it again, a second straight time to get it. Either way, you do that and you extend the clock. The clock is the most important thing. The clock is your friend. The one thing you cannot do, and I know there were people on Twitter there was a few people on Twitter who were pushing back on this. They're like, oh, it was an easy little play. You know, it was in the flat. Saquon should have caught it. Saquon has had the most drops since 2021 of any running back. But forgetting that little note, the only thing you cannot do in that situation is stop the clock, because then Atlanta gets 40 more seconds and they can matriculate the ball down the field with 40 more seconds. That's 5 more plays. And what do? They call the pass, and the one bit of risk is that that you drop it, and that's what happened. And I immediately texted, oh my God, because this game was over, Kelly. This thing was more than likely over. Atlanta ball down 3. 1:46 left in this ball game. Let's call it 1:42 to be exact. And then, of course, what happens? Atlanta, by the way, then I have to stop there, because then Philly opted on fourth down to kick the field goal, which some people, and I think correctly so, would argue, and a lot of people will push back on this, if you kick the field goal there, which they did to go up 6 points, right, then Atlanta has to score a touchdown. If you don't kick the field goal there, and remember, let's say you ran a play that didn't get there, Atlanta, with now about a minute left, is not as incentivized to get the touchdown and matriculate the ball all the way down the field. A field goal will tie the game, will push overtime. So it was another reason for Philadelphia to go for it, because it changes the calculus for the Falcons as well. Now, you can't prove that, but it does. So there's that little detail too. Anyway, they kick the field goal. They go up 6 points. They go up 21 to 15, pardon me. Cousins, and then it's Atlanta, just like as if they had no problem going downfield. No pressure on Cousins the whole way. Cousins to Pitts for 11. Cousins to Mooney for 21. Cousins to Mooney for 26. At this point, I am actually texting, don't score too quickly.
Yeah.
Then Cousins to London for 5, incomplete. And then Cousins to London from 7 out, touchdown. 21-21, pardon me, tie game. Unsportsmanlike conduct on Drake London for mimicking gunfire. By the way, there's a lot of people like, why is that a 15-yard penalty? The NFL has been consistent about this. There were 13 Pittsburgh Steelers that got fined for doing this in a celebration back in 2022. So you can't do that. It makes the extra point, the go-ahead extra point from Young Haeku, a 48-yarder, and of course he sinks it, because as we have talked about, no kicker misses anything anymore. And the Falcons go up 22-21 with 34 seconds left in the game. Nick Sirianni with the malpractice of all time. You cannot throw the football there. I'm sorry, you can't. No matter how easy it sounds, the only thing you can't have there is the clock stopping, and the incomplete pass made it stop. Now, 34 seconds left. There's one more thing to talk about with the Eagles. They get the ball. They got 2 timeouts. They just need a field goal. Goddard for 13. Timeout. 27 seconds left. Then they're at their own 43 at this point. So for Jake Elliott to be in field goal range, Jake Elliott is great. You get 20 more yards from your 43. That's a 54-yard field goal for Elliott. You get 15 more yards as a 59er. But let's just say it's 20 yards and you get a 54. That's kind of chip shotty for Elliott. I hate to say it. Sure, you could miss it, but you know how it goes these days. And Elliott has shown a propensity in his career to hit really long clutch field goals to win games, even north of 60 yards. So you only need 15, 20 more yards. And then Hurts goes deep, like you didn't need all that on the play. And it's picked off by Jesse Bates. Ball game. 785 more survivor entries. Toast. And Nick Sirianni costs his team the game, in my opinion. Saves the Falcons' season, perhaps, with that decision, as the Falcons go to 1-1. And I just cannot believe what it was that we saw. That was not even, Kelly, in my thinking, or that was even a possibility that he would call a pass there. And yet he did. Just run the ball, tuchus push it, whatever you need to do, but you can't do that.
Yeah, the I find the field goal conversation almost more interesting.
It's a fascinating
because
one.
Because like you said, we've been talking for I mean, multiple weeks now about how these kickers from 50 plus are automatics. That part becomes, you're going to hate me a little bit. If I'm making the calls, it is run. It is run on third, run on fourth. At third and three, and with the tush push, everything that the Eagles got, they got one of the best offensive lines in the league. You got a stud running back who's looked like a stud all game. I'm running it, and I'm running it twice, and I'm not even thinking about it.
Why would I hate you for that?
Why you're going to hate me is because if Saquon Barkley makes a catch that he's made 1,000 times before in the flat, this isn't even a conversation.
That's not the point. Someone said this on Twitter,
it's
too.
Not the point.
That's not the point. There is a risk-reward assessment you have to make. The possibility exists that that ball gets dropped, and it's 40 more seconds for the Falcons.
Yeah, I agree.
That shifts the win probability dramatically. You can't do that. I wasn't even thinking there was even a possibility. And Sirianni's like, watch this, buddy.
Oh, no. Nick Sirianni was glad to throw it on Kellen Moore after the game.
Saquon Barkley, I didn't even know this stat. Saquon Barkley, 16 drops. They put this up on the screen yesterday. 16 drops since 2021, most of any running back in the NFL. But even without that, that's not the point. The point is you don't even allow for that possibility to happen. They did. Eagles lose. Falcons win. And a whole bunch of survivors go down with them. More on this. All your tweets next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game live at Circa. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Let me quantify what we were just talking about with Sirianni's decision. Next gen stats. The Falcons had just a 0.7% chance of winning with 1:56 left in the fourth quarter, according to the NGS win probability model. The comeback is the seventh most improbable win in the next gen stats era since 2016. Seventh most improbable win.
Oh, man.
So again, for those who are like, I don't know, I kind of like the pass. No, I'm sorry.
Hey, Gil, it's a great play running on fourth down after you run the ball on third. If you don't make it.
Oh, my God. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. And as you imagine, there's a whole bunch on this, which I love. DJ Slybri. Oh, Slybri. He's a big Eagles fan. He says, more interested in winning with pizzazz than just running the ball and clock. Talking about Sirianni. More interested in winning with pizzazz than just running the ball and clock. And there was no need for that low percentage throw for the killer INT. You don't need to get to the 20 for Elliott either. The 35 would have gotten done. Multiple fireable offenses. Yeah. Preach. Preach indeed from DJ Slybri. This is from Buddhist Man. Kicking the field goal is the worst of all the decisions. Taking the three there forces Atlanta to go for the win as opposed to playing for the field goal to tie. Exactly what we said. Yes. Drew Robb, 591-90973, because 591-90972 was taken. Just run the ball and take the 45 seconds off the clock. That's Kellen Moore trying to be cute and failing miserably. But earlier, take the field goal on the second drive, and it's a moot point also. We mentioned that. A lot of people are going to go back to the first quarter, and I agree with that. That's why I reviewed it, because fourth and four in a scoreless game, get 3 points. Why not?
It was like fourth and four, like at the nine?
At the nine.
Something like that? Yeah, I'm kicking there.
Alex Ivanov, 904, average 5.5 yards per carry, but yeah, let's throw it. LOL. We pointed that out as well. DJ Slybright came back with, he goes, if I wasn't at the game in an Eagles lifer, I'd tweet Mario Cristobal is laughing at the end of the game, coaching by Sirianni. This from, you can just roll through these guys, Jay Good, 96. The malpractice was forcing it into double coverage with a timeout 15 yards from field goal range. Yeah, all of our points here. Mike Stack, S19. If I'm the owner, he's fired. 100, gone. No more. I'm sorry. Well, we already said before the year that because he's got two new coordinators in Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, he might be the weird guy that has a line to being fired first. That didn't help. BG Linhart. Two tush push, Gilly. Two tush push.
I'm with it, Brent.
You're right, man. Yeah. That's the point. Our own Matt Brown. Matt Brown, M2. Hertz was averaging 6.5 yards per carry. It's a no-brainer. He's right. Matt Brown also believes in the fact that you shouldn't have kicked the field goal there either. Alexandra.
Really?
Oh, this. Yeah, he says. Don't kick the field goal. He's right. Because it changes how a team then plays the next drive. By the way, yeah. I mean, we didn't make enough of that. Like, the Eagles just went to a sieve at that point. Not that they were great defensively all game, because Bijan was killing them. Yeah. Bijan with 14 carries, not 15. I know somebody had the prop at 14 and a half, and he just fell short of 100 yards. But, I mean, that was unbelievable. Kirk Cousins was just unpressured the whole way down. This is a great one. Alex Apostolos. I knew there would be one person. Holy crap, Philadelphia got a first down at the 2-minute warning with the lead and field goal range, and I turned it off. What? Yeah, it's not good. You probably shouldn't turn those off. Tony's Market Stable. Okay, this is let's segue into Survivor with this, guys. Congrats on the Survivor win. Thank you. By the way, can I get my Survivor? I didn't get my Survivor sounder from yesterday. I'm a Survivor. Thank you very much. According to Survivor Atlas, this is from Tony's Market Tips, but according to Survivor Atlas, this was before last night's game, Kel. We're talking about Circus Survivor now. 14 people had all 10 entries on the Texans, including Sean Perry, our poker guy from last year, the villain, who made himself the villain anyway, and former Circa champ Love My Baxter. They had all 10 entries on the Texans. Two people had 9 of their 10 entries on the Texans. Only 163 contestants have 5-plus entries. Only 96 contestants, have 6-plus entries. 30 contestants still have 10 entries. Now, that could have changed after last night. I don't have the update, but let me give you where it stands, because when I updated Survivor yesterday, Kelly, I mean, that is so 2000 late at this point. Because the Eagles, 785 entries gone with that Nick Sirianni-induced loss yesterday. So here are the updated Circus Survivor numbers are incredible. Again, 14,266 entries to begin with. The first week, 39% got bounced. This week, of the remaining entries, 55.45% of the entries got bounced. So it's 5,564 total in week one, 4,825 in week two. That means out of the 14,266, only 3,877 remain, meaning that 72.82% of all entries are gone after 2 weeks, 72.82%. Last year at this point, after 2 weeks, it was 35.99% gone. 2 years ago, however, it was a shade more by percentage. There was only 6,133 at that point, but 74.73% had been eliminated after 2 weeks 2 years ago. So we are right on the cusp of the most carnage in Survivor history, a Circus Survivor history, but not quite. Not quite after last night.
It's incredible.
But given that there were 14,266 and there's only 3,877 left, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's just crazy with Survivor where we're at.
One more tweet we have to give. We talked about Matt Brown, we had to give Dave Ross equal time. Our own Dave Ross. No, Gil. He must stay. Them's the rules.
Sirianni being fired?
Yes, he's a Cowboys fan. Dave is a Cowboys fan. So he's like, no, he must stay. Them's the rules. He wants Sirianni to stay forever.
Assuming I heard some of those post-game clips correctly, I think the worst thing he did was blame it on Kellen Moore. He, like, blamed the play call on Kellen Moore. You're the head coach, man.
It's brutal.
I mean, like, those are the things of why someone's on the hot seat like that as much as anything. Like, are you okay? You're not going to take accountability for anything you do? Wow.
It's not good. Not too good.
I don't know how many games there were this week, man, of you and I were texting a little bit yesterday. I was rewatch the fourth quarter of that Texans game. How does this happen? Like, you just walk away from some of these games. And like last night, it's like, did I really just see a Falcons victory? Like, how did that happen
It's amazing, too, because I was going off on Sean Payton yesterday, and all it took was one more game to wipe Sean Payton off the Dumbo of the week, right? And you point out that also, that the Sunday night game, the Texans were up 9 with the ball at the 4-yard line.
4-yard line? Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it should have been an easy-peasy cover. Instead, they were, fighting for even the win at the end and Survivor entries. Anyway, that's the NFL, man.
I'm ready to move on to week 3. Holy cow.
Before we do that, can we look at a few awards? Because we mentioned this briefly yesterday. Specifically about Offensive Rookie of the Year. Like, are we sure this is going to be a quarterback? But let's look at all these, Kelly, real quick.
Let's do MVP first.
Yeah, NFL MVP right now, which, again, Cleve T.A. did such a great job giving us the parameters of that and who can and who cannot win. If we could throw that up on the screen, guys, that'd be great for MVP. this is, you know, one of these categories where it's not quite as interesting as the others. But Patrick Mahomes, you know, sort of de facto, can we give him the MVP every single year that he even exists? He's at plus 370. Josh Allen's 4-1. CJ Stroud, plus 550. I remember when we did our quarterback rankings in the offseason, I'm like, he's conservatively a top five quarterback. He is. He was number five on my list. Plus 550. By the way, Hurts is 12-1. No. Burrow and everybody else, 20-1 or longer. Do you like anything here?
No, not at all.
I don't either.
Not at all, because I think that is, I mean, like, it is week two, Gil, but man, it feels like one of those guys at the top, one of those three guys at the top.
It's not a very exciting category right now.
Right, exactly.
Offensive rookie of the year. By the way, the MVP trends that Cleve was talking about, 11 straight and 16 of the last 17 MVPs have been quarterbacks, and those teams have averaged over 13 wins in their MVP season. No MVP in the last seasons came from a team with less than 11 wins, eventually, and the average preseason win total for the teams has been 10 wins with a floor of 8.5 wins. So if your pre-flop season win total was below 8.5 to begin with, you ain't winning this. Thank you to Cleve for that, for the guardrails on that. Real quick now, rookie of the year. We openly ask, can this year where it's not a quarterback? Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jaden Daniels now co-short shots at plus 250 each. Jaden Daniels done more with his legs than his arm at this point. Caleb is plus 350. He was the short shot all offseason. Malik Nabers, the only one in single digits at plus 750, and your guy, Xavier Worthy's at 13-1.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to make a bet now, would there be one?
I mean, if I had to make one now, it'd be on Jaden Daniels still.
Still.
I still think he's got the best shot at winning this, just because the legs matter so much with the counting stats at the end of the year. If I had to, I would not make a bet right now. I have Worthy and Keon Coleman tickets, which I guess are still live and I'm liking. But if I had to make a bet right now, it'd be Jaden.
And I have Jaden. I want to go defensive or offensive here, guys. Let's go defensive, since it's up on the screen. Defensive rookie of the year, your guy, FSU grad, Jared Verse is 4-1. Okay, let's go offensive rookie of the year. Let's do that. Wherever you guys want to go.
I think Verse is rightfully rightfully is there.
Yeah, okay. So Jared Verse is the short shot for defensive rookie of the year and offensive rookie of the year. Excuse me, for defensive rookie of the year, it's Jared Verse. Would you make a bet? Dallas Turner's 5-1, Byron Murphy 7-1, Laiatu Latu 8-1, everybody else double digits.
No, I think you got to, I mean, look, I think it would be one of those top two guys, or you're waiting a little bit. Some of these guys still finding their footing and where exactly they're going to be on these defenses.
Okay. We'll take a look at coach of the year, because I think that's where it gets interesting. We'll do that on the other side. Will Hill with all of his bets, week three in the National Football League and beyond. Maybe some baseball, maybe some college football. It's a numbers game right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Circa. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, in the mothership at Circa. You miss the noise around us? You miss the headphones?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm just curious. real quick before we get to Will, we wanted to look at Coach of the Year. Do you want to do that first? You want to do Coach of the Year?
Yeah, all sure. Right. We can do Coach of the Year.
So I have Jaden Daniels for Rookie of the Year at 7-1, and I have Coach of the Year, I have Mike McDonald at 13-1, which was not nearly as good a number as you got, I think others got. Right now, it's Jim Harbaugh. The Chargers' 2-0 start puts him at plus 650. Mike McDonald is the second number on the board. The Seahawks are 2-0. He's at 7-1. Kevin O'Connell of the 2-0 Vikings, 8-1. And then Robert Saleh, who we all said, hey, if the Jets are good, he's not getting the credit. Somehow, he's 10-1, along with Mike Tomlin. Someone told me the Steelers are 2-0. I'm checking into it. I'll get back to you guys on that, if there are, in fact, 2-0. But that's the list. Is there anybody else there? You see Dennis Allen of the Saints, right now the sort of 2-week champion of football, if you will. They're 11. Dennis Allen is 11-1.
Did you bet that yesterday by any chance? I think we had like a 2-second chat during a break. We got a tweet that there was like a 40-1 out at MGM still in town yesterday when everybody had moved to 11-1 on Dennis Allen.
Oh no! I just have my McDonald bet.
Yeah, I know. I was talking about yesterday.
Yeah. No, you're asking, did I bet it?
Yeah.
I didn't bet a second person.
Like we had like a 2-second chat about it, during a break, and then we never really talked about it.
I will
anymore.
Tell you, when we get to your college football guessing line segment later in the show, I will tell you that I made a Heisman bet.
Oh, there we go. All right.
I made it at 1,000-1.
1,000-1.
You heard what I said.
Is it another backup Ohio State player?
It is not.
Can we add it to the list?
It is not. It is a starting quarterback in college football.
Okay, I like it. I mean, this is one of those. If you had to bet something right now, what are you betting?
If I'm betting something right now, again, you know, there's guardrails with this kind of thing. I think I would still bet McDonald at 7-1. Like, I don't want to get into that game where it's like, well, you could have had him at so and so. No, 7-1 is still good.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. I think if I had to bet something right now, it'd be the same thing.
Yeah. When it gets 5-1 or below, then it's a different conversation. But right now, I think it's still bettable. Will Hill joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at NotTheWillHill. That's the with two E's. He is the host and the producer and the emperor of the Should Have Bet More podcast. He joins us now. What's happening, Willie?
Boys, what's going on? Well, fun time of the year. 2 weeks from now, Gil. 2 weeks from this very moment, we're going to be an hour away from postseason baseball day games. As much as I hate the extra teams, I love those wild card games, middle of the afternoon. So really fun time of the year.
It sure is. By the way, I didn't even say he's on the Bear Bets pod with Felica. He's on the Mega pod, of course, Will as well. About baseball. So the National League wild card race, and specifically the number 2 and 3 position, Diamondbacks are in the 2-hole right now, which is the fifth overall position in the National League. They have a 1-game lead over the Mets, who inhabit the final spot right now after their win last night over the Natties. And then there's the Braves, 1 game on the outside looking in of the Mets. They lose to the Dodgers last night. How does this end up? Less than 2 weeks of baseball left. How does this end up for you?
I mean, my heart says the Mets get the final spot, and I do think this team has some karma, some good vibes. They've had so many just sort of, feel-good wins. Last week against the Blue Jays, they're getting no hit, and they score 6 in the 9th. They've had a lot of those. I just think the schedule might sink them where you have they basically finish their season on the road with 10 games, Philly, Atlanta, Milwaukee, all on the road. Now, they held their own somewhat in Philly this past weekend, so I guess they play at Philly, or they host Philly to end, but a lot of these games on the road at Atlanta, life on the line. I would pick the Braves, but something is missing with this Braves team. It's just outside of Sale and Free, they just don't have the same pitching. The offense comes and goes. I think it's a toss up. I haven't looked at the market. Life on the line, I'd pick Atlanta, but I wouldn't be shocked if the Mets get the spot. I'm rooting for the Mets. I know the group that we're on. Every time the Mets get a hit, I find out about it right away because we're all big Mets fans rooting for the Braves to miss the playoffs. Let me throw it back to you. Life on the line, bets aside, who actually gets the final spot here?
Diamondbacks and Braves. Diamondbacks will get the second to last, and the Braves will get the last. Because I don't trust the Mets. That's why. Sorry, Mets fans.
Is that something
They've had a great year, though. Think about this was a throwaway year. They got rid of Scherzer and Verlander last summer. This is kind of a gap year. They were 11 games under 500. To even be where they are is just sort of miraculous.
All the divisions are done. Yankees aren't going to gack the East now that they have a 3-game lead. All the divisions are settled, right? Nothing's going to change.
Oh, I wouldn't pencil the Yankees in now. They still have 3 against Baltimore. They're in good shape. When you're up 3 with 12 to go, you should get home. But both of those teams have been so schizophrenic that I can't put anything past the Yankees. I do think the Yankees have stabilized a little bit, got some of their pitchers back with Schmidt and Heel. And Ian Hamilton, who's a good reliever, throws hard. I wouldn't be shocked if Ian Hamilton finds his way in the closer role at some point because he's probably their best raw stuff reliever. Speaking of Heel, how did he go from 11-1 like this time a week ago?
No idea.
To even money, like none. Overnight, he had 5 innings, 1 run. I actually think Wells at +160 has better value. I don't understand the shift in that market, and I don't understand if Heel's even money or thereabouts. How is Skeens over 3-1? Like there's okay. a disassociation there.
That's where I was going. I made that point via text. I'm like, well, if Heel is the favorite, how is Skeens not, right? And Skeens, let me just ask you about real quick because I don't want to spend the whole segment on baseball, but Skeens is +310 after his outing yesterday. Another great outing. Gives up 1 run. Pirates lose. He gets the loss, by the way, which kind of sucks for him. But and Jackson Merrill hit a homer last night again. So it's not like he didn't keep pace. But at +310, do you bet Skeens right now? This is literally with less than 2 weeks left in the season. Would you tell folks to go out and bet Skeens given the price of +310?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a coin toss, and I might even be, 50-50 or 51-49 Skeens. I mean, look at the numbers. It's historic stuff. He came up May 17th, was good enough to start the All-Star game, like Bear was tweeting about. He's got legitimate Cy Young numbers. And look, you could throw the innings out there. He hasn't thrown enough innings. He hasn't thrown that many fewer innings in Sale. I think it's only 30 or 40 fewer innings in Sale. It's not that many. I think it's going to be a very close race. And this idea that they were going to shut Skeens down You know, September 1st, I mean, look, we're already in the middle of September. The season's basically over. He's going to make just about all of his starts here. They actually finish against the Yankees. We'll see if he makes that start that final weekend. But this idea that they were going to shut him down and Merrill was just going to run away with this, that market is off. I don't know who's going to win, but I do think that market is off.
That last sentence you just said, I don't know who's going to win, and I think we both feel that. I don't know who's going to win, but plus 310 is a bet, period. You may lose, but plus 310 is a bet, literally with less than 2 weeks left in the season. Yeah. You bet anything in baseball today?
Just Philly. And Wheeler going against Yankee legend Frankie Montas. It's like minus 130, minus 135. I will take Philly here. Better pitcher, better lineup. I'm okay laying the dollar 30.
Yeah.
Other than that, the awards I think are interesting, but not too much otherwise here.
Well, I'm just thinking about the finest moments of the Frankie Montas era in New York. Yeah, just tremendous. All right, football. Week 3 in the NFL. Have you bet anything yet?
Boy, after last night, I mean, how can you justify betting on this league after what we watched last night? Sometimes you have a dream and it sort of feels like it's real, and you wake up the next morning. Was that a real? Did that really happen? Or was that a dream? That was me with the football game last night. Like, did I really witness that?
Incredible.
Like 3rd and 3, you're just running at will here. You could QB sneak it for 3-4 yards in your sleep, and you do that, and then just you let them go down the field like there was 10 seconds left in the game, not a minute. I can't believe what I watched. That being said, I'm going to go back to the well with the Steelers unders. I just think this is an under team until proven otherwise. They just run the ball constantly. The quarterback runs, the either hands it off. They play like a service academy. So they play really good defense too. So the Chargers are going to play a similar style where they want to play, you know, good defense. They want to run the ball too. They're a physical team. So to me, this is another like, you know, 16, 14, 14, 13 type of game. So I like the under 35.5 Steelers Chargers.
And the Steelers and the Chargers both trying to get to 3-0. My goodness. One of them will get there unless there's a tie, of course. College football, anything?
Not much yet. I did play East Carolina plus 7.5 against Liberty. I think they are that's a team I've watched a lot of. Don't ask me why, but I have. They play good defense. The quarterback, Garcia, is a 4-star. He used to play at Miami, Florida. He's got a lot of talent. He is like a Jameis Winston or, I don't know, a Romo. He can win the game by himself for either team because he throws a lot of interceptions, but he makes a lot of big plays. And I actually think East Carolina, they're 14-1 at DraftKings. I haven't shopped it enough. I actually think they're live to win the AAC because if you look at their schedule, they don't play Tulane. They don't play Memphis. This is, I think, an underrated team. So 14-1, I think they are a team that can find themselves in the AAC title game.
Okay. Do you play Survivor again? I always forget.
I mean, I did until I had the Lions the other day. Oh, that's and then right. I bounced.
Oh, I didn't know that's about you.
What a jerk.
Pardon me. I don't want to play that game with you. If you were in Survivor, who would you play? But
Somebody who wouldn't win, probably.
Somebody who wouldn't win. I, by the way, have narrowed it down to 3 choices this week. I've narrowed it down to 3 choices. Either the Buccaneers, because now that the Panthers, now they're going with Dalton, now you can't necessarily leave the Bucs for later, and you can't play the Raiders this week by the same justification. So for me, it's either the Bucks, the Browns, or the Bengals. One of those three.
Browns or Bengals, probably for me. Yeah,
one of those three.
Will, I use Bucks in one.
Will, I like the Skeens commentary. I really do. Like plus 310, bang. Plus 210, I'd hit it at that point. But plus 310, for sure, it's available at DraftKings at that number. Thank you, Will.
All right, see you guys. Thanks for having me.
At Not The Will Hill, Shoulda Bet More is the name of his podcast. Again, Bear Bets Podcast and the Megapod. Yeah, Beating the Book Megapod.
Yeah.
Our guest this week will be Adam Chernoff.
There we go. That's a great episode right there.
NFC South Talk. Speaking of Bryce Young's benching, we'll talk that next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you the type of player who's looking to get down $10,000 or more on an NFL line at the best price in the market? Or perhaps you're looking to get your in-game play instantly accepted? Introducing SportTrade, the app that's going to change sports betting forever. Minus 104 lines instead of the typical minus 110, instant in-game betting, and a concierge player service. SportTrade is perfect for those who want a premium betting experience. Live in New Jersey, Colorado, and Iowa, and coming to you, Arizona, in about a week. And Virginia, a couple weeks later, this fall. Download SportTrade. Use code VSIN to earn 10% cash back on each wager in your first week. That's in your first week. Terms apply. You got to be 21 years or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. Skill Alexander, live from Circa here on a Numbers Game. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Best listeners in the game, Kelly. Have I said that before? I believe I have.
You have.
Let's double check that. By the way, I double
just,
check.
Just read off your phone here.
I double. Oh, is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Off the phone or off the computer? Let's do the computer. Oh, for goodness sake. This is from, this is a boondoggle is what this is. This is from, let's see here.
Working on new tweet technology, people. Sorry. Thank you for being patient.
Tweet technology, everybody. Tweet technology. I just want to read this one. This is from Uncle underscore Bush says, JB goes, Gil mentioned he made a Heisman bet at 1,000 to 1. I immediately say, is Talia Tagovailoa still in college? First of all, he was 200 to 1. It wasn't 1,000 to 1. And that was all of us who made that
bet.
Is it
Bo Nix? Let's grab Bo Nix tickets.
This is from Joe Pita, who says, here's what I have found every year talking about, I believe, Survivor. He says, and likely to be more true in 2024, given the huge field and prize pool, the entry that only has an underdog left on Christmas is worth materially more than the other entries that have favorites, even though it has a much smaller chance of winning. He said on the Megapod, he is not letting Christmas considerations influence who he's picking now in Survivor.
Really? Okay. Yeah,
not at all, he said. Jed O'Connor. The end of the game showed one glaring issue. Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni have not evolved as a coach or a quarterback. I'm convinced Nick thinks he's the smartest man alive, and there's nothing between the ears of Hurts. Wow, okay. This is from RJ Sports 344. Tough week for survivors. How many are we down to? I think I mentioned that. Less than 4,000 now. Less than 4,000. In fact, exactly 3,877. So that, again, is less than 28% of the remaining, 28% of the original entries left in Survivor, Circa Survivor. Kay Browskowski, is there new lighting in the studio, or is that just a twinkle in the eyes of a man with a first-place NFL team? Commanders tied for first.
I didn't even think about that.
God, I hate that name so much. Isn't that funny?
It's so bad.
NFC South. So yesterday, again, before the Nick Sirianni debacle, and the Eagles debacle, was announced right after the show too, Kelly. We left here within 10 minutes that the Panthers have decided, Dave Canales, their head coach, decided to bench Bryce Young in favor of Andy Dalton. That's less than 24 hours after Canales declared the top pick of the 2023 draft would remain his starter against the Raiders. So a bit of an about face there. And I just, you know, the first thing I said, and this is more sports talk radio than it is betting, but the first thing I said is Bryce Young the biggest bust of all time? And the only responses I got was, I don't know. Jamarcus Russell was pretty bad. I'm going to sit here and tell you, I think it's Bryce Young.
I think it is, too.
And let's just real quick, before we get into these NFC South stats, these odds.
I still have more belief in Jamarcus Russell, Gil.
Today.
I still have more belief. I think he's still got a cannon, right? Come on. Listen, he's a big guy.
Listen, we famously have been saying this joke from the day we lost this bet. But we all bet C.J. Stroud. I bet C.J. Stroud plus money multiple times. Big plus money, too. Not negligible plus money, right? Big plus money to go number one when they made that trade. With you know, and it's just like, of course they're going to draft CJ Stroud, and they just convinced themselves to go with Bryce Young. Now, even those of us who had Stroud as the number one pick, I think I speak on behalf of everybody. I thought Bryce Young would not be good because he's short. I didn't think he would be this bad.
Yes,
and I'm talking about the two games this year. I don't know how you can go from being that good at Alabama to this inept. And let me just say, Bryce Young last year. This is before these two games. These two games this year, he has a total QBR of 9.1. 9.1 scored out of 100. And he looks like he's just all confidence is gone. But last year, he had arguably, this is according to FTN Sports and Aaron Schatz, let's remember last year, as bad as you remember it, it was worse. In the 104-year history of the National Football League, Young's minus 1,078 passing DYAR, that's a proprietary stat of theirs, the third worst ever recorded in the 104-year history of the National Football League, just beaten out by the rookie years, beaten out in quotes, of Josh Rosen and David Carr. Young was regularly beaten, battered, and bruised behind a makeshift offensive line, sixth all-time with 62 sacks taken, third all-time with 477 yards lost. When he managed to stay upright, his 9.1 yards per completion was the ninth lowest ever. Take the sack yards away from his completions, and he netted just 4.1 yards per dropback. That, adjusted for era, is the 10th worst season ever. Not that his 5.5 yards per attempt without sacks was much better. That's one of the 20 worst seasons of all time, adjusted for era. only the 2010 Jimmy Clausen led.
Jimmy Clausen managed
to slip below last year for Bryce Young in terms of that category. And so, and what they gave up, remember what they gave up, the 9 and 61 picks overall, the number one pick this year, which ended up being Caleb Williams, plus their second round pick in 2025, plus a top 10 receiver in DJ Moore, making one of the priciest trade ups in NFL history. And by the way, the fact that CJ Stroud was drafted right behind them makes it all the worse.
It was a move that will set back the franchise for years. It is. I'm glad you said what you said, because as much as we've complained, and some joking, some not, about like we thought it was going to be Stroud one, we're mad about our Stroud tickets.
Can't believe it.
Neither one of us is sitting here saying, oh, we knew this was going to be the case from the beginning. Like, we thought this guy was going to be able to at least probably play a bit. Couldn't make it through 2 years.
Even if we had the prediction, and correctly so, that he wouldn't be good and Stroud would be great. And we did have that prediction. But even that, the fact that you went from that good at Alabama,
yes,
I get it, you have five stars all around you, but he was really great. The fact that you went from that to this player this year is not just you. You are not set up for success by your coaches. And Canales, by the way, was really, like, people forget with Tampa Bay, because he's given credit for, oh, he made Baker Mayfield great. They were in third downs more than any other team last year, Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. He wasn't all that creative in first and second down. And Baker Mayfield and the Bucs just had this unbelievable success rate on third downs last year. So part of it is, and Canales wasn't there last year, so I'm not blaming him for that, but like Bryce Young is completely shot of confidence. And now, so you say to yourself, this poor kid, he's never going to play for the Panthers, one would think, barring injury again. Can he resurrect his career elsewhere? Only time will tell.
It's a bizarrely, like, what were your, I know this is a little late because this came out yesterday, but do you think it was the right move yesterday? Like, is that the right move to bench him now?
I don't know if it's the right move. It's certainly not the right move for the kid's long-term confidence. Dave Canales probably said to himself, I'm 0-2. I saw that Frank Reich got fired here in less than a season. I don't know about this owner. He's a little bit Meshuggah, Dave Tepper. I better make a change now. And the big thing is, you lost the locker room. If you stay with Bryce Young, you will have lost the locker room. So in that one respect, maybe it is the right thing to do beyond his own ego.
I believe everything you just said is right. But this had to have been cleared by Tepper. And that's the worst part, right? Is that for Bryce Young, it's the whole organization just gave up on you. It's not just Canales. Like, I think it's the whole organization.
What's interesting is the NFC South odds now, bringing this to betting. So the Saints have had the best 2 weeks of any team in the NFL. They are plus 140 to win the division. The Bucs, who are also 2-0, are plus 175. The Falcons are plus 225 to win the division, after they get off the schneid yesterday with that miracle win against the Eagles. And then there's the Panthers at 120-1. And I just want to say, would you be mad at anybody for playing the Panthers at 120-1 now that Andy Dalton is the quarterback and it's only two games in?
I think you could make a case for every single one of these bets.
But I just want to focus on the Panthers 120-1. Andy Dalton is a serviceable quarterback.
Sure.
He's a serviceable quarterback in a division that 2 weeks ago, before we saw 2 weeks of football, we all said, good God, we all thought the Panthers would be last, but 120-1 on the Panthers now with Dalton at the helm seems like a fairly justifiable bet to me.
I think you could make a case for any of these teams at current price. I think you could buy with the Panthers. I completely understand what you're saying, because I think it goes back to you making a case for the other teams,
right?
Of, do you really has your thoughts changed so much in 2 weeks that you think this division is so strong that they can't possibly come from where they are and get to the top?
Well, again, it's Andy Dalton, it's not Bryce Young, and you keep saying, oh, you can make a case for every team in the division, but plus 140, plus 175, plus 225, and 120-1, one of these things is not like the other. And so if you run this back 120 times, do you think the Panthers win it more than once? I think they do.
Probably.
120-1 on the Panthers. I haven't made it yet, full disclosure, but looks kind of interesting to me.
Only 30-1 made play.
How about some NFL power rankings? This should be interesting. That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.